This free program is paid for by the listeners of Redwood Community Radio. If you're not already a member, think of joining us to help keep free speech alive.
And driving under the influence cases. Ed reminds medical marijuana users it's easier to get permission than forgiveness. So see your doctor first. Ed's number is 923-4764. You can read the new marijuana law at marijuanadefenselawyer.com. It is 7:04 here at Redwood Community Radio. This is KMUD Garberville 91.1, KMUE Eureka Arcata 88.3, KLAI Laytonville 90.3, and in Shelter Cove at 99.5, all on the FM dial. In support for the upcoming hour, which is the Environment Show, support for Redwood Community Radio comes in part from Wildberries Marketplace, committed to offering locally produced North Coast foods and beverages that collectively benefit local chefs, farmers, bakeries, breweries, winemakers, and coffee roasters, and consumers who enjoy their creations. Wildberries Marketplace, top of the hill, G Street, and Arcata. And lastly, support for Redwood Community Radio comes in part from People's Productions of Redway, a full-service production company specializing in promotion, production, and bookings. They have been uniting people through music for over 12 years. The people are at 923-4599. Stay tuned for the Environment Show coming right up.
Acres of forest land from the south fork of the Eel River, even to the ocean to the west in one place, but mostly west of the south fork Eel between Piercy and to a bit south of Leggett, was purchased by Redwood Forest Foundation Incorporated, or RUFI, with a loan from Bank of America. And right now they're describing what they're doing with that land, and it's supposed to be community-based forestry, and they're looking for input from the community. So this tape that you're going to hear right now, the summation from what they crammed six or seven ruffians into the studio, and Duff recorded. People give a different aspects, so we'll go to that now.
All right, 923-3911. Give us a ring as you listen to the Environment Show on KMUD.
And after this tape, Scott Greason will be calling in.
Okay, hello everyone. This is Duff. I'm co-hosting an interview.
A conservation investor. We talked to insurance companies. We looked at doing a public bond issue. We looked at every combination of financial tools that we could think of to try to make this thing work, because we really did have a problem. We didn't really have the money ourselves as an organization to finance a lot of preliminary work, and we couldn't put any money in ourselves because we didn't have any. And like I said, the way we planned to harvest the property, i.e. virtually do nothing for the first decade, it didn't give us much prospect of being able to service any debt that we picked up. So that was the conundrum. I mean, that was the real problem that we had. And fairly early on in the process, the Bank of America was interested in participating in the transaction. They had heard about it, and were interested in being at first a small player in a transaction that might come down the road. Well, as the years went by, and I mean literally, it was about 3 years, as the years went by, and we were disappointed more and more by what we were hearing from investor groups, where they were all interested in being involved, but then as the conversation got deeper and deeper and deeper, it began to come out that what they wanted in the way of a return on their investment was higher than what the property was going to permit, at least the way we plan to manage it. So over the years, the bank, I think, got more comfortable with RUFI and with the board members, and began to feel that not only did they think we had a great thing in the community working forestry model, but that we actually probably had the skills to put it together and the right attitude towards it and the right backing of the community. And
so the next little anecdote that's worth telling is the first time I ever saw that land, which was about 1978 or 79, when I was visiting the first restoration site I'd ever seen, and there was Richard Genger out on GP land, having to fight with him for permission to go out into this enormously cut-over land, doing a restoration site, trying to recovers, you know, some of the health of the land that had been so badly damaged. And it was the first restoration site I was ever on, and there was Richard out there with a crew. They had to walk in. They had to walk in 5 miles. They had to carry all their gear in. They had to fight with Georgia Pacific at every step of the way. But they did this incredible job of clearing a massive log jam, making 3 steps instead of one massive one.
Conservation excited about this example of community-based forestry.
All right. Duff, if you have any questions, pipe in here. Now we got here Steve Smith here, he's got a day job too, but does forestry for Redwood Forest Foundation Incorporated for the USAW Redwood Forest. He and Greg Giusti have been really important in this whole formation, and I was going to hope Steve would maybe focus on
nearly half a mile of prime coho habitat. Along with that, we open up a lot of other habitats as well. Our systems, change the silviculture, lots of different changes that have to also be paid as we go along. And this is part of what our scheme here
when and how, if you understand what I'm saying. We're not going to have the luxury of sitting back and being critics, as it will. Environmentalists, the timber people, there's no lines now. We're all members of the community who are trying to make this thing work. I think that's important.
I also want to make note that we also are putting an easement on this property. I think they made that clear, but an easement's for perpetuity, and this we're really taking out any development possibilities. But we're also keeping in the fact that this is a working forest. And this is a working forest is a concept that has not been in easements before in California, where we actually...
cliche is about talking about 7th generation.
Everyone.
Okay, guys, you're back on live.
Excellent. Well, thank you, all you virtual folks. This is Scott Greeson, Executive Director of EPIC. This is the Environment Show, and it is the Pledge Drive. And I think we've just had probably one of the best examples I've heard in a while of what makes K-Mud and the community around K-Mud so extraordinary and unique, grounded in a local place, focused on a long-term vision, making it happen with unique combinations of people and skills and insights, and you know what to do next. You got to make it happen yourself. Support the mighty Mud. Call in and make a pledge at 923-3911.
Yep, or KMUDRAD, 1-800-568-3723. All right, Scott, you up in Weaverville?
No, I'm in Bayside at the moment. I got to Weaverville and back.
Oh,
long, wet day.
Real good.
Very productive.
Yeah, so I guess we're tri-hosting here, huh?
We are. And very shortly, we're going to have Mike Hudak, author of Western Turf Wars, and the vice chair of the Sierra Club's National Grazing Committee on. And we're going to talk to him about his book and about some of the grazing work that EPIC's been doing recently. But Richard, maybe you could just put a little frosting on the cake you just served up. Pretty amazing,
K-Mud makes those kind of things possible. You just got a description of some of the details and the broad aspects of 50,000 acres of forest land that's in the K-Mud listening range and community, northwest Mendocino County, that's going to be part of the resource base that the organization that has it, their bylaws are community-based forestry, and it's up to the community to interact and determine that. And they are a nonprofit, and the profits are supposed to go back in the community, and it's up to the community to work out management that is integrates a community. And K-Mud is bringing that to you, and K-Mud deserves your support. Because
yeah, we've got to support K-Mud in making this possible.
That's right.
Yeah, 923-3911. And I think it's worth mentioning, as we do most times when the Environment Show comes up during the Pledge Drive, that the Environment Show is one of the basic reasons that K-Mud exists. And I was gratified, I think, to learn that, how important the Environment Show has been in the genesis and functioning of community radio. It's important to me, that's for sure.
Yeah, and there's such an incredible heritage there, and you have to mention Arlo Hagler, if you talk about that, who carried the K-Mud Environment Show as a host for years, and it was like that kind of fortitude that makes Kmart
so, you know,
community value.
Every time the phone rings, Arlo gets his wings.
Oh. And this is Gary Hughes helping make the environment show during the fund drive happen.
90s. And it's significant that most of my hikes I was getting to meet retired managers from the BLM and Eastern Ranching. You've probably heard of some of them, like Waste of the West by Linda.
Donated grazing management. What have they done? What's...
Yeah, well, I mean, going back to what you said about, like, why I wrote this book, yeah, I wanted to focus on the politics, but there's another aspect going on here, and that is I think that a lot of people really don't connect a lot of the environmental damage that they see in the West with it having been committed by grazing of livestock.
Right.
And one part of that is that the grazing has been going on for so long that it's just part of the landscape. And so people see eroded gullies. But there's another thing here, too. And I think that a lot of people are just unwilling to acknowledge that ranching is really causing this kind of damage, not just... And I think some of this has with what you kind of got into there with saying that this rancher says that they were the first environmentalists. There's this thing that people like Lynn Jacobs talks about in his book and George in Welfare Ranching that they call the cowboy myth. And so what's the cowboy myth? Well, it's kind of this whole attitude that's been developed about ranchers and cowboys in literature since the late 19th century, and it's a very positive portrayal of cowboys and ranchers. You look at these stories that started already in the 1880s and 1890s. I mean, some of these cowboys were portrayed as supermen. You know, you see them wrestling grizzly bears, and in some of the early films, you see them jumping their horse over a crevice that no horse could jump over. Of course, it was done with trick photography, but did the kids watching these films in the 1920s realize that? Probably not. And even when you don't see the cowboys portrayed as some kind of Superman, they typically were portrayed as being a very positive, upright kind of person, often in the role of what I would call a quasi-law enforcement officer. So you see them
performing. Right, if not a maverick, yeah.
I mean, they're like sheriff, you know, bringing the cavalry, you know. But it's the cowboys who are out there doing this.
Right.
And so I think that this helped to establish kind of in the collective consciousness or subconsciousness of the American people that these cowboys and ranchers are like what stands between civilization and savagery. So it's even more serious than these ranchers claiming they were the first environmentalists. It's like they're what's saving us from the collapse of civilization. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to write a book that would challenge this by talking with these retired managers and grassroots environmentalists who had a lot of experience working with, who could really talk about the political influence that they had seen ranchers exert on these management agencies like the Forest Service and BLM, either through intimidation, direct intimidation, or through their elected officials.
Right, and we've seen both of those things here on the North Coast, I'm sad to report. That,
uh-huh.
You know, even here in what's not on first blush a place so much like western New Mexico or Utah, relatively wet, heavily forested zone. We also have cattle grazing on public lands thanks to sweetheart deals with public agencies or just flat out bowling, you know, grazers bowling over agencies with the support of elected people who are taking their side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in terms of successful strategies for confronting that kind of power,
Well, there were a couple of people who prevailed. One guy interviewed, Don Oman, for instance, was transferred into the district ranger position in southern Idaho. It was the Twin Falls Ranger District. And he'd found this place was a real mess. His predecessor had let the Cowboys get away with all kinds of stuff. The fences were not mended. The water developments were in disrepair, so you had cattle drinking out of streams and trampling the streams. And the ranchers were pulling another trick also. You know, they had the allotment divided into pastures, and they were supposed to rotate the cattle through these pastures throughout the grazing season. And what the ranchers would do is that they'd hold the cattle back from one pasture to the next. And then the off date would come, that is that they would be off the allotment entirely, and they'd only be getting to the last pasture. And they'd say, gee, we got all this grass left here. We should have an extension.
Right.
And apparently Don's predecessor would let him get away with this. Well, then Don came in the late 80s, I think it was 87, and he started making them clean up their act on this stuff. He made them mend the fences, get the water developments going, and when they pulled that trick about not having the cattle through the entire allotment at the end of the grazing season, well, he'd just say, well, you're coming off because you overgrazed the earlier pastures just so you'd have the grass left over in the last one. And the ranchers didn't like that. They didn't like it a lot. And so there was they'd contact their congressional representatives. There were investigations. One rancher even made an implied death threat against Don. And even this is not anything that just came out in my book. This rancher actually said this to a New York Times reporter. This was published in the New York Times in the early 1990s. And so the Forest Service did react to this pressure, and they actually planned to transfer Don out of the area to another district. And Don resisted that. He actually brought a whistleblower lawsuit against the Forest Service, and he won. And so he got the stay in that district for another 7 years or so.
This is probably why we've had the whistleblower laws changed. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I think that's, you know,
so
I heard a lot more
sticking to his
stories.
Guns, hanging tough.
Yeah.
That's
but I've heard a lot more stories from people I interviewed about people, not themselves necessarily, but people they knew about who were transferred out.
Right.
And, you know, and they went along with it because, I mean, a lot of these people really want to advance. And so if they smell trouble like this, they say, oops, you know, I made a mistake here by confronting these guys. You know, how am I ever going to make four supervisor? Okay, I'll take the transfer. And so they go along with it.
Right.
Yeah,
well, that does seem like the pattern we've seen here on the North Coast.
Have you ever heard about the Malpai experience down there in New Mexico, Mexico-Arizona borders?
Yeah.
Is that positive, what you know about that? I've one of the main guys up there. That's where the ranchers actually got together to reduce overgrazing and,
right.
and shift their herds around. And I guess the Nature Conservancy was involved in that and other organizations?
Yeah. Well, you know, the guy who really knows the most about that is George Werthner. I didn't investigate that area for my book.
It seemed positive. You know, the guy came and spoke to the Buckeye Conservancy here, which is a Humboldt County, and he... I mean, he really said the days of a shoot, shovel, and shut up, which is the first time I heard that expression, were over, and you had to talk and be respectful and acknowledge science. You know?
Which is a great way to start, but the bloody fact on the ground in western New Mexico and eastern Arizona is that southwestern wolf reintroduction has failed because shoot, shovel, and shut up.
Still happening, yeah.
You know, so
we're getting near the end.
Yeah.
I want to wrap up.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much, Mike. Really appreciate your time. Western Turf Wars, folks, look for it. Google it.
It's on the website. It's
Amazon.
Got its own website, westernturfwars.com.
Excellent. Thanks for your
time,
and thanks for your energy. And come out and help us with the Kidder Shacklefoot allotment on the Klamath Forest and all our other stuff we're working on.
Okay, guys.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Nice talking with you. So long.
Yep.
So this is the Environment Show, and this is the pledge drive, and I'm wondering if we've got a couple of takers for the new book on off-road vehicles on our public lands.
I'm not sure. Gary was in here raising up the total to $37,590.
$100 gets you a copy of the book if you're one of the first two to do it, if we haven't got them already.
Fred's wagging his finger. I'm not sure if that means something of sorts here.
What's that?
But Fred was just making a radio sign language thing, and I'm not sure what all that meant. I think it means Bell's going to come in here. There's a 422 Earth Day daily raffle. Only this is the Earth Day daily raffle. Every pledger is entered all day long, and I better not win because I'll have to withdraw my prize because that's just not right here. So here's Belle.
And
Hi, Belle.
I forget. Why do I forget names?
I'm Scott.
Okay. Hi, Scott.
You can call me
I'm trying. Gary. Gary pulled the name of the winner of tonight's raffle. And I almost fell over because it's the perfect person to win it. It's Nate Mattson.
Oh, wonderful.
Right. So Nate Mattson.
What do you mean?
You drive us up a tree, Nate.
He won
In a K-Mud tote bag.
The K-Mud tote bag. Television, what do you...
VHS. A VHS.
Struggle in the Woods, and the books Primal Fears, Tears by Kelpie Wilson.
Oh, excellent.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of Redwood Community Radio. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of KMUD or renewing if you've already joined. A regular yearly membership is $50, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.